Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
We'll get to some of your texts a little bit later on. Frank Saravelli's appearances are brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta, live thoroughbred racing back at Century Mile Racetrack every Friday and Saturday. For more information, head to thehorses.com. Hello, Frank. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, Bob. Big night in Alberta last night.
Yes.
With the elections.
Yes.
Does this mean that we're going to see Bob Stauffer on the ticket at some point in the near future carrying an Edmonton riding?
I would suggest that would be highly unlikely. I can't even get the votes in my own house.
Well, I mean, you are a popular guy in Edmonton, so
I think there'd be some debate on the word. I've never been a particularly popular guy, Frank. Sometimes when you speak your mind on issues, not everybody likes it.
I know the feeling.
Yes, the one thing I did say was, "What's happened has happened. The vote is the vote." I didn't tell, I didn't say which way I voted. I will tell you, my house was divided when it came to the election. So Everybody did their own thinking for themselves, and we just wanted people to get out there and vote. And I said, and now the time has come for, the UCP, who are going to head up. They got a majority. They got to dig in now and help make things, grow and diversify Alberta carrying forward. And I extended that metaphor for the position that the Edmonton Oilers are in, Frank. And that the Edmonton Oilers, the Oilers are close, we know that. But what's the old saying about close? It only counts in something in hand grenades or something like
horseshoes
that.
Horseshoes and hand grenades.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. The Oilers management, it's not just on the players. The coaches and the managers have got to dig in as well to get Edmonton to the ultimate promised land. Your thoughts on that?
I think that's fair. I mean, look, part of this is also on the players. I think the Oilers, as mentioned, had some unfortunate luck with regard to injuries when it came to their next rung down of stars producing. And, they weren't able to get even really average goaltending that might have been the difference between advancing and not. Part of that is on management. Part of that's on the players. It's not just one group
right.
of people that needs to push this forward. It's everyone pulling on the rope at the same time. But just to put a bow on our conversation about the politics part, does this mean this is good news for the Flames arena deal, right?
That is correct. It is good news.
What are the Oilers going to get in return?
I would think about $330 million because that's what they're giving to the Flames bid.
It's only fair, right?
Fair is fair.
And is the new leader of the UPC, UCP?
Yes, Danielle Smith.
Is she's an Oilers fan, right?
No, she's a Calgarian. Rachel Notley is an unabashed Oilers fan. She grew up in Fairview, went to the U of A. I had several buddies. You've even met a couple, I think, that were in class with her at the university. They thought she was a very smart person. But Rachel Notley also called, as I recall correctly, when she took over leadership of the NDP, was critical of donations that were made from certain private sector individuals, which is always easy for members of the NDP to do when they have a funding arm by the name of the Alberta Federation of Labor. So everybody gets money from somewhere. That's kind of how these things work.
I'm just looking at the map here and the results from last night. It's interesting that it seems like basically what happened in Alberta is more or less the entire same of what happens in the U.S., which is the cities and the surrounding areas of cities generally go towards Democrats. And in this case, everywhere else in the province goes towards the Conservative Party.
That would be, yes, a general, yeah.
Places in between, like a Red Deer or whatever, sort of on the fence.
Yeah, Red Deer has traditionally been a little bit more conservative. The one thing I would say is, as you know, the Oilers, you're as plugged in as anyone in the business. Would the Oilers be a top six or seven revenue generator for the NHL?
Ooh, I would think they're really close. I would say if you just spitballing, I had to guess. My guess would be seven or eight.
Yep.
But they're close.
Well, a large part of the Oilers fan base is not just from Edmonton. It's from rural Alberta as well, as you know. So
that's why it's the Oilers radio network.
That's why it's
the Oilers. It extends all the way up there.
Yes, it does.
And, basically to the North Pole.
And what was Michael Jordan's infamous line about his shoes? Republicans buy shoes.
Buy shoes too.
Yeah. Right? Like, you know what? We have fans that are supporters of the UCP. We have fans that are supporters of the NDP. And now everybody's got to dig in and get going. But to answer your question on the funding of the arena, yes. So that caught some people off guard, because 10 or 11 years ago in the province of Alberta, it was a much more, I think, a more difficult battle at that time for Daryl Cates and the Oilers Entertainment Group to push for the building. There wasn't a political party coming out and saying, hey, we're going to give $300+ million to make this happen. It just simply did not exist. And the
so now, but you have to make it right. It's like,
yes, you do.
I don't know. It's like, as a parent, if I were to, you know, give my daughter a pile of money upon my passing and leave none to my son. You got to make it equal. If you have two, you got to take care of both.
Which is why I opened the show.
Which I don't have a pile of money, by the way.
That's not what I hear. Just for this segment alone, I hear you're doing very well. But
life-changing. Yeah. Life-altering.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's going to be a really interesting thing. And again,
I'm not kidding. Like, we're not like actually like tongue-in-cheek. Like, there should be some kind of something done for the Edmonton Oilers.
I would think that would be the case. Yes. You would, again.
What would be on the Oilers list? Like, what would they
want? I haven't even gone down that path, but if they're given $330 million for the Flames bid and they weren't there to support the Oilers bid, I would think something needs to come somewhere. And
I doubt it.
And who?
That's just not how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if they ultimately come to fruition. I have a feeling that there will be something.
Pay half of Connor McDavid's next new deal.
Well, that's one way to secure votes in half the province.
Well, yeah, maybe you could keep your party in power at that point.
Well, you could do better in Edmonton if you did that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's focus on what's happening. Let's start with... there were a couple coaching changes, a couple coaching announcements. The Spencer Carberry to Washington was no surprise at all. I think we talked about that about a month ago. In fact, I might have even texted you some predictions, and that was the one we both agreed on. Were you a little bit surprised what shook down in Nashville if Barry Trotz moving John Hines out this late into the offseason and replacing him with Andrew Burnett?
Yeah, I'm just surprised that they didn't. Look, Barry Trotz is like an unbelievable guy and someone that has all the class in the world. I'm surprised for someone who's been in that position, like has stood on the bench and has previously been fired, would not handle this in a different manner. And I'll just give you some background. So for clarity's sake, my understanding is the Predators told John Hines a few weeks ago that they were going to go through a process. And I think that meant a review process. Now, I was told a few days ago that Andrew Brunette was in Nashville for a, quote, multi-day interview. And I said, multi-day interview? Like, they haven't even fired John Hines yet. Like, how do you get to that point? It's almost like if you know that you are doing that, haven't you already essentially made the decision to change coaches? Almost in the same way that we always hear all the time, hey, if Team X doesn't win tonight, this guy is getting the gas pipe tomorrow. And I say, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If you already have gotten to that point, you know that you're moving on, just do it.
Yeah.
So with Andrew Brunette, I understand the connection, scored the first goal in Preds history, played for Barry Trotz, all those things.
Yes.
But my God, John Hines, there's now six other openings. Like, at least cut him free, give him a chance to land one of these jobs.
100%
agree. And now he will have a crack, it seems, but the Panthers did this to Andrew Brunette last year, and it didn't leave a good taste in anyone's mouth. I don't know why Barry Trotz, now at the helm, would do it this way. I need more information.
Especially given the fact that Trotz has recently been an NHL head coach himself. What it shows is that even the best intentioned people at times can be a little bit self-serving. that's just the reality of the situation.
Potentially six other head coaching openings after this. Carberry was 8. Brunett is 7. That leaves 6. Rangers, Flames, Blue Jackets, Ducks, maybe the Leafs, maybe the Sens.
Yeah.
And all depends on who's the next GM in Toronto and who's the next owner of the Sens. But I wonder, as everyone has speculated openly about Peter Laviolette being the next Rangers head coach, and it certainly seems like there's lots of smoke there, John Hines has the BU connection with Chris Drury. Does he become a candidate with the Rangers?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, who's going to be the next GM of the Maple Leafs?
My money would be on Brad Treliving, and I am a gambling man. I think he checks so many of the boxes. I think he's the front runner. I think he was the first person that they interviewed in Toronto. I think they're in an intelligence gathering mode right now, trying to talk to as many people as they can. I don't think it's super far down the track with Brad Treliving, but I do think that there's mutual interest there. We'll see where that goes.
We're joined by Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravalli for Horse Racing Alberta, live thoroughbred racing back at Century Mile Racetrack and Casino Friday and Saturday. For more information, head to thehorses.com. All right, Frank, Ottawa ownership, what's happening there?
A lot of people that I've spoken to are projecting clarity within the next 48 hours. And, you know, it's interesting. There's been so many connections or dominoes to Ottawa, meaning how does this relate at all, if in any way, to Kyle Dubas and the Pittsburgh Penguins search that they have? We talked about the coach openings. It seems like every bid has some kind of connection to someone as people that they'd like to bring in either as their next coach or their next general manager. And there's a trickle down effect that I think you have to be concerned about, or at least it raises an eyebrow if you are a fan of the Edmonton Oilers. Like, what happens next if a certain bid wins with regard to Steve Staios? What happens next with Kyle Dubas? What happens next with DJ Smith? There's a million things that are all connected to this that no one knows who that group's going to be, whether it's the Kimmel group, whether it's the Apostopoulos family, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yes.
You know, there's just a lot going on that I feel like there's some dominoes that need to fall here in the next couple days. I'm thinking before Friday.
Is there any chance that Nico Sparks ends up getting Ottawa?
I'd be very surprised. Like, just from the people that I've spoken to, they seem to be ultra confident. We've seen the tweet from Nico Sparks. They're out there fishing for money still.
Yeah.
And I don't say that guessing. I say that because I've seen the emails and I've seen the pitch decks that they've sent to prospective investors. And the one quote that I tweeted out last week was, there's some urgency to this, or this is somewhat of an urgent matter, was the direct quote. I don't know how 48 hours or a week before, whatever it ends up being, before a preferred bidder is selected, that you don't have your cap table nailed down and you don't have the funds potentially required in order to pull off the bid that you've told the NHL you will. So I can't imagine that they're a realistic shot, but at the same time, they seem to be telling everyone they know that they think they're getting it and everyone else needs to get in line.
Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff. Frank, is the Ottawa GM job potentially, and Pierre Dorion's there right now. We've had Pierre on the show over the years. He's done a good job drafting. Maybe he would be replaced, maybe he wouldn't. Is the Ottawa situation better than Pittsburgh's, given that, you know, the Penguins are, they've got a situation where they got Crosby and Malkin and Letang and not a lot of cap space, and those guys are getting older? What do you think?
I don't even think they're comparable. I don't even think they're in the same ballpark. One of the big complaints about Ottawa, obviously from the lack of success the last few years, was their ownership situation. And not to sprinkle on anyone's grave, but Eugene Melnyk has died. They're obviously moving on to a well-funded you would think owner that's making a record bid for an NHL team. There's excitement in the marketplace. There was all season long. There is the prospect of a new building most likely coming as a result of this ownership change. They've got one of the best young rosters and prospect pools. Like, if you were to rank the seven Canadian teams on who has the best chance over the next 5 years to break Canada's 31-year cup drought by the time next season rolls around.
Yep.
I have a hard time saying that the Sens are any worse than three, and you could make the argument or case that they're in the number one spot. I don't know that you'd win the argument. I'd still bet on the best players in the world, but so you could at least make the case.
So you would have Edmonton 1, Toronto 2, and Ottawa 3?
I might go Edmonton 1, Ottawa 2, Toronto 3.
Well, that's the music to the ears for our listeners, I can tell you right now. All right.
And that's not pandering to the market. That's not at all. I would say the same thing on a Toronto radio station or an Ottawa station.
The bottom line is the Oilers' two best players are completely dug in, McDavid and Draisaitl. Did we see that out of the core four from Toronto?
No, and I think there's real questions about what that core looks like moving forward, regardless of whatever Brendan Shanahan may or may not have said to them in the last couple weeks.
Who do you got at the top of the list? I know you had you know what? We talked about that last week. I'm going to take you down a different path. You had somebody on the show talk about, somebody on your show on Daily Faceoff, sort of talking about goaltenders not earning their due respect. Come mm-hmm. Hockey Hall of Fame. Maybe explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, so it was a great story. I encourage you to read it on dailyfaceoff.com yesterday. It was from a guy by the name of Paul Peduti, and he's actually an accountant in Sudbury, Ontario, who's a huge hockey fan and has done quite literally thousands of hours of work to put every player and therefore every goaltender on a level playing surface. So basically to be able to compare the 80s Oilers against the stats of the current Oilers of today and to make them all equal based on the different eras of scoring.
Yes.
His Twitter handle is @adjustedhockey. If you haven't followed him, he's a great follow. And the work that he pointed out specifically with regards to the Hall of Fame, he's had an 8-part series that's running on our site. This was one in the series that basically said it's criminal how the Hall of Fame has handled goaltenders since the 1967 expansion outside of the original six. Only 13 goalies that have played in that era have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So for perspective, he said there's been 15 Winter Olympics in that span and 16 goalies have scored goals in that span. And yet only 13 goalies, the most important position in the sport, have been inducted. And I think some of them they've gotten wrong, to be honest, and fair. And so his case was, yeah, Henrik Lundqvist is a shoe-in for this year as a first-time inductee, but there's other guys that they've gotten wrong, and his case was made around Curtis Joseph that really deserve a longer look and consideration.
Well, Curtis Joseph put together, as you know, the 98 playoffs, stopped 92 out of 93 shots in the final three games against Colorado when they were at the height of their powers with Forsberg and Sack, yep, Patrick Waugh in goal. And the Oilers stunned Colorado and came back from 3-1 down. So there you go.
Curtis Joseph, as he pointed out in the story, very quietly has the 14th most playoff wins of all time, despite never really playing on a powerhouse team.
How is Rogi Vashon in the Hockey Hall of Fame as a player?
Well, that's a really good question. And he ranks all of the goalies in terms of what he believes his stats indicate, as I mentioned, putting everyone on a level playing surface. And his point was, it's not just Rogi Vashon, but if you look at his list, Jerry Cheevers is way down at 54th in terms of qualified or unqualified candidates. Eddie Jockman, 47th. Both those guys are in. Rogi Vashon was 20th. Ed Belfour recently got in. He was 13th. And he has Curtis Joseph all the way up at number 8. So It's a pretty incredible look at the depth that he goes into to explain this entire story.
Well, I'm just thinking here. I mean, Cheevers was in Boston for the 70 and 72 championships. They used to split him and Eddie Johnson back in the day, including in the 71 series against the Montreal Canadiens when the Canadiens upset him. Eddie Jockman was goaltender for the Rangers. He never won a Stanley Cup in New York at that time, but he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Did Cujo just move around too much? Was that the issue? He went St. Louis, Edmonton. Where'd he go?
I don't think so.
I mean, Toronto, then Detroit. He had some, I mean, he's a pretty good goalie, even a better guy. Just a great guy.
Well, I think the big thing is, the issue is the Hall doesn't know how to properly evaluate them because of the difference in stats and what save percentages looked like, that they just, they haven't been able to really do the work to properly evaluate everyone and put them on a level playing surface the way Paul has.
Well, I can remember when Jim Gregory, and again, you talked about, we don't want to be hard on people that have passed away, but he was on radio talking about why Dick Duff needed to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I'm like, Dick Duff? Like, the guy was like a second line winger, you know, didn't put up prolific numbers. And at that time, Glenn Anderson was not in. And you know what it was. It was a popularity contest of the era.
Duff got in. And to be fair, a lot of people would say the same thing about Kevin Lowe.
Yep. A lot of people would. 100%. But Glenn Anderson scored 498 goals. And, you know, in the 88-90 Cups, was as important as any Oiler in those Cup years. I mean, in 1990, he walked Ray Bourque twice. By the way, as a Philly guy, were you at all, you got 30 seconds, were you at all disappointed to see the Celtics blow it last night?
No.
There you go. Frank, great stuff. Love having you on the show. And the answer is no on the politics, okay?
By the way, both Boston teams lose on home ice or home floor to an 8 seed.
It's unbelievable. Crazy stuff. Thanks for joining us, Frank. That is Frank Cervalli from Daily Faceoff. Off to a global news weather traffic update with Randy Kilburn. Back with Philip Kemp, who signed a 2-year contract extension with the Oilers today.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.